Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Questions You Have Answers I Give, normally exclusively on the Steel Wars Patreon page Content Club, but this is an all-access episode, so we are on the iTunes, the regular feed, and if you want to join in on, inverted commas, the fun, you can become a patron, but we'll talk about that later on. We will get to some questions from our patrons and see where that takes us. We've got one here from Josh Caldra. Hey, Steel, have you seen the fan attempt on YouTube and Patreon to make a full-on Shadows of the Empire live action series? What are your thoughts? I have seen this. My thoughts are excitement, she wrote. Now, I don't know, Shadows of the Empire, the novel, sort of, I sort of see in my Twitter circles gets frowned upon and a little bit giggled at maybe. But for me, reading it at the time, 90s style. Apart from the Leia Shizor bit with the pheromones and stuff, which when I read it for the first time, I don't know, it was Star Wars. Like I've talked about this before. I didn't think to judge Star Wars. I was like, this is Star Wars, so it's got to be good. Do you know what I mean? So this is, you know, pre-special edition, pre-prequels, pre-preak, the pre-preak era. So, like, I feel like when special edition came out, that was when Star Wars fans got super judgy about Star Wars. Yeah, you know, and I'm not saying if they were right or wrong, but I don't know, and maybe that's when the sort of internet was evolving and stuff. I know I followed a lot of Star Wars Special Edition news and rumors, you know, via the Force.net mainly. I probably ventured other places as well, but that was my main base. I was pretty in the 90s, Force.net, Rebel Scum. That's where you got your info from, and that's the way I liked it. But anyway, so maybe if I reread it now, I'd be like, oh, but maybe I'd still like it, but I thought it was a fun little bit of mortar between the two bricks of Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Now, I have heard about the Shadows of the Empire fan film, Around the Galaxy podcast. Wait there, I'll just look it up with Pete. Did an interview with him. And the guy actually has DM'd me about it because I think Pete said I was a big Shadows of the Empire fan. Around the Galaxy podcast. Let's go to Shadows of the Empire. Everyone else could do this, but David Ortiz, episode 62. he sort of talks about of the Around the Galaxy podcast. He talks about the challenges getting made, raising the money, all that good stuff. So I've watched the trailer, which is all sort of just CGI effects, and it looks great. So I'm excited. I'm excited. We'll definitely have David on as the, you know, there's some more stuff to talk about. I actually think Pete did a great job with that interview, so to interview him now would sort of, like, there's already a good source of information about that. So check that out if you want to know more about the Shadows of the Empire fan film. Which is it actually called? Doesn't really say. I'm looking at a link to it on Fan for Tracks. Their Google search rankings came up first. So congratulations to them. All right, let's get back to Josh's. I'm down to watch this. I'm really down. I haven't watched many things like that. I've watched a fair few fan films, but sort of how they're making a film, a story. Because most of the fan films seem to be sort of smaller scenes, or chapters, rather than like doing the whole movie or a whole story. You know, and there's, you know, they come out in parts, or sometimes they don't, or they wanted to but it didn't. But what it reminds me of is what is it, The Secrets of Grayskull or something like that? Chris Fresh from Geek Dudes is currently yelling, "Fall of Grayskull," is that what it's called? But it's a fan He-Man film, which is, you know, it's super hokey effects and stuff. It's like if they tried to do the Mandalorian effects with the back screens in 2001 or something. Maybe even earlier. But it was fun to watch because, you know, we are starved for live action He-Man excitement. You've got the Dolph one, but come on. You don't go to Earth. Eternia. I've been to Earth. Want to see Eternia. Another question. This is from Josh. Another question. How do you feel about Rey's story continuing on Disney Plus, or maybe a series where a different character is explored in every episode? I feel like that would please lots of appetites for people who want standalone films for various things. Example, Fett, Vader, Knights of the Old Republic, live-action Clone Wars. I think Disney Plus opens up so many opportunities for great content. That your last line sounds like a Disney press release. Disney Plus opens up so many opportunities for great content. And who can argue? Who can argue that one? I don't like it. I don't like it, Josh. My hope for the continuation of the Rey character, my favorite character of the Disney Star Wars era, is definitely Rey, because I was a Luke Skywalker guy, and to me, not only is Rey like that character for me in those films, she was also a big Luke Skywalker fan. Well, in The Force Awakens, when she's like, I thought he was just a myth. Loved it. Anyway, my hope for the continuation of the Rey character is Star Wars Episode 10. As I think Hawes, this is his, not prediction or hope or something, but he called it, I feel like, at, what was it, King Tom? I think it was Horse. Star Wars Episode 10 in 2027, the 50-year anniversary of Star Wars. So that's, I want to save Rey for that. And yeah, I just, I also don't like a series where a different character is explored every episode, because just doing one episode on a character seems like a bad movie. And also all the work that you have to put in for designs and stuff. I know a lot of them are just used in one episode, like in Star Wars, they're used in one scene, but I feel like you got to put all that work into either a motion picture or a series rather than a one-off. I don't like the idea of them doing sort of straight to streaming movies. I would much prefer, because you've got the medium of television, that's what you're going through, and the advantage of that television has over a motion picture is you can tell a longer story through chapters that teach you about the world and its characters. And, you know, you can go into those quieter scenes like The Mandalorian has, where, you know, say The Rise of Skywalker doesn't have too many of them because they're like, they've got to keep going. And so I feel like to do a movie, so you're limiting the story that you can tell and the depth and put it on the smaller scale medium, because the advantage of a movie is it's 2 hours of giant screened, big budget amazement. So to sort of, you know, take away that big screen and the group environment and put it on television and but then not chapter it out and really delve into the world, I think you're getting a lesser story. So I would like series, at least 6 episodes. Please. That'd be great. Josh continues, at the same time, reaching back to old characters will get tired. I'm glad a brand new era is being explored with High Republic. So am I, but I am yearning for something to watch based in that era, whether it be cartoon or live action. I'm not saying I know anything's going to happen, but I am yearning, because that's how I like to consume my Star Wars. That's my favorite medium. Just sitting there, mouth agape. I agree the logo wouldn't look great on a t-shirt. Ha ha ha. Stay awesome. Thank you, Josh. Very constructive post. Cheers, mates. Now, let's go to the next page from the last episode. Nick Aquino, he chimes in when I was doing the best moments for each film. He chimes in with best moment for Rogue One, K2SO's death scene. That's pretty good. That is that's a moving one. Nice work, Nick. Brad Volmer is here. Steel, I have a burning question left unanswered for years now. My wife of 5 years now has the coolest maiden name. Oh, that I read that wrong. My wife of 5 years now has the coolest maiden name. I read it as my wife of 5 years now has the coolest maiden name. And that maiden name is, I should get to that. My wife of 5 years now has the coolest maiden name, Snoke. That, needless to say, I fought for taking as my own name when we said our vows. Years later, when Snoke was sliced in two, she joked it was good that I didn't take the plunge after all, as he, well, wasn't as cool as we all thought. Her opinion, not mine. I would like to know, with all your knowledge as the leading source in Snoke, my opinion, I would definitely argue that, if anything has ever been released publicly or privately regarding the origin of Snoke's name from a creative point of view. We all remember the story of Scarith being generated from a botched Starbucks run by Gareth Edwards. Very funny. And I would just like to know if there's something similar with the name Snoke. I feel like it is truly a unique name and never would have thought it to be a real one had I not met my beloved. Help me, Steel Saunders. You are my only hope. And thank you for my new favorite shirt. Brad got the I'm with Snoke t-shirt, which it's one of my favorites that we've done. It's got Luke Skywalker's robot hand pointing, like the I'm with idiot, whatever that t-shirt is. And Andy Murphy, my friend from back in Melbourne, a really good sort of skateboard artist, did it for me. And I just loved how it turned out. I've actually got it framed, the original art, above from where I'm talking right now. So it's a very, I love my Andy Murphy original Star Wars art pieces. Whenever he does, he did also the Yub Nub, the Ewok, Pal Peralta bite. And yeah, whenever he does them, when we negotiate the price, I always say, and I've got to get that original art as well, because he actually draws them before he scans them in. So that's pretty sick. But he got that one. And my favorite photo ever with the I'm with Snoke is when I got to interview one of the times, double name drop, I got to interview Kathleen Kennedy, and I wore that t-shirt and got a photo with her with the finger pointing at her. And I was very happy with myself that day. I know that's hard for you to believe, the listener at home. But where did Snoke's name come from? I have no idea. So I am going to Google it. Snoke's name, origins, JJ. Okay, here's something on Reddit. It's probably the 10th time I've ever been to Reddit. To say, this is 4 years ago. Today I decided to check into some theories regarding one of the most enigmatic characters in Star Wars The Force Awakens, Supreme Leader Snoke. I came across many interesting theories and also looked into the meanings of the names of the Sith. For example, Darth Vader equals father in Dutch. That's actually not why he was called Darth Vader. That's a happenstance. Phil Stozek has debunked that one on his Twitter feed. He did all these like debunking Star Wars myth posts about a year ago. Really good. Or Vader could be short for Invader 2. Okay, here's some more obvious ones. Darth Sidious, Insidious, Darth Tyrannus, Tyrant, Darth Maul, Malicious, etc. This encouraged me to work with Snoke's name to see if there was any subtle hints in his name that could give us a bit more insight on his character. At first, I couldn't find anything that fits with Snoke. Then I decided to spell his name backwards. Econs. Okay, so Snoke's name's backwards is Econs. Kind of got really confused there. I was quickly able to find a Swedish translation for Econ, which means echoes. With that being said, there are rumors indicating episode 8's working title is none other than Star Wars Echoes of the Dark Side. Coincidence. This is hilarious. Because he was a clone, so he was an echo. So they're right, but they're making the wrong conclusion. But I also think they're digging way too deep and looking for something that's not there. Like backwards of the Swedish translation. Maybe I'm wrong. But if anyone can chime in with some confirmation or anything on that. But that is so funny that like an echo and they went with that. Oh, my God. And you could have said, so now you can go, this is the thing. I'm going to post on Reddit. I'm going to get a Reddit account and I'm going to log in, work out how it works and type the theory that Snoke was called Snoke because Snoke backwards is Econ, which in Swedish means echo, which was a hint that he was a clone. I did not think I would be breaking such Star Wars ground as I would during this Q&A. Wow. There you go, Brad. And much like Snoke, your wife is an echo of her parents. It's like poetry. It's all connected. Rhymes. Thanks, Brad. And thanks for picking up the t-shirt as well. I appreciate that. Michael Nip. You mentioned Enfys Nest, and it sparked a memory that she told a story of her mother fighting back against the Syndicate that would eventually become Crimson Dawn. In my fanfic, I would love to see them tie the Clone Wars together with Solo and have her mother be Trace or Rafa. Do you think we'll get more Enfys Nest backstory? That is an interesting tie-up there. With Trace or Rafa, with Enfys Nest's mother. I'm thinking of the timeline and it fits. Yeah. Nice work, Michael. Do I think we'll ever get more Enfys Nest backstory? I would like to. And I would like the idea that she could interact with... you know, maybe some people in from Solo, and you know, like Cassian, getting her in the Cassian show. That would be why did I say Solo? I meant Rogue One. So yeah, it would be cool to have her in the Cassian show, show up and help out. The character is sick, like awesome, but. It's always hard when she's a character from the like worst performing live action film that they've done. But it's such a bummer that story, those series of movies popping off from Solo didn't get done because we were robbed of some like ripping stuff, I think. So I sort of don't think we'll get more, but man. Colour me happy if I'm wrong, for once. Thanks, Michael. Timothy Dunlap. How you doing, Tim? Hey, Steel and patrons. It's been a year. Sorry I haven't been in here often to ask questions, but the people have answered the call, taking up the banner. The content has been sizzling. The questions have been on point. My questions. When The Mandalorian was originally marketed, it was supposed to be a story in a new part of the universe about new characters. Do you think the creators are now slipping back into the trope of only telling stories about things and characters we know? Is it actually impossible for the Star Wars franchise to move beyond the original trilogy, or will this only happen long after the original fans like us are gone? Oh, who cares what happens then? That's my point of view. I don't know, like, you know, there's so many rumours about established characters coming in to... Wow. That was a swoop bike going past, guys. Star Wars reference. There's so many rumours about returning characters, existing characters... and entering the Mandalorian show, but we don't know how often they're in or how much of it or how it's done. So I'm really like, they made a killer series. So they have the benefit of the doubt from me into the second one. My hopes are high. It's there. It's there to be disappointed. Maybe I'm setting myself up, but they asked for it by bringing out a killer series, and the first series definitely did just rely on new characters. You know, we went back to Tatooine for one amazing episode, I might add. Team Toro, Calican Crew. But it was, all new. So maybe in the second series, just, you know, they went off on themselves, and then the second series is like, we'll have a few tie-ins to keep it within the web of the Star Wars canon, make it a little bit more unified by having these characters come in, but giving the series a season to grow by itself without throwing in the cameos too early. So I admire their restraint. And season one and two, like season one seems to have been written with season two in mind. So they have my trust. And hey, I think it could be super cool to have these characters come in. You know, the like having Tamira Morrison come in and play either, you know, Boba Fett or Rex or whoever. Sorry to mention Rex Hawes. I know that's, you know, you don't want to comprehend that. And I'm sorry to mention Boba Fett, Corey. I know you don't want to comprehend that. Maybe he can play. Why not both? Do you get paid twice? If you're, you know, you're playing two characters, doing your Boba Fett, doing your Rex, you get a little bit more, a few more credits, hey? What's going on there? We'd have to refer that to the Bounty Hunters Guild, of course. But here's where I'm getting at. Tamara Morrison, such a part of the prequel era. His face was literally pasted all over the thing. To have him then appear in a post-Jedi story, and also, what I just, to have him grounded. Like I love Attack of the Clones, but those stuck on heads. Ah. I just think it'll be great, and I think it will bind the galaxy more, and it'll enrich my viewings of, you know, the Clone Wars, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith. So I'm positive. I'm high on it right now. So, but we'll see what they do. Thank you, Tim. Catherine Neen. Oh my God. Okay, so I think I dispelled the myth about how Australian toilets spin in the opposite direction, because they don't spin at all, because they are designed quite differently in the last episode. I'm sorry for non-patrons, you missed that amazing content. But the water in an Australian toilet is far lower in the basin. It's a safer experience, trust me. So Catherine Neen, on my side, the US toilets versus Australian toilets, way too much water in American toilets. It's disturbing. Catherine, we often agree about most things, and this is no different. Thanks, buddy. Maria, hey, Steele, did you check out the new Ahsoka Itty Bitty? I can't believe it's already sold out. # bring back the call-in show. We're working on bringing back the call-in show. It's so weird because for a lot of people, they're getting a lot of extra stuff done in isolation. But for us, because of we've got Harry, that we're sort of, you know, we try to do little like shifts on. You work for 4 hours and I'll take Harry, then we change over. I'm getting far less done. And so the irony is that people want the call-in show back now because they've got this free time, but I'll have an easier time to do it once everyone's back to doing stuff. But it's a work in progress. I do miss just talking. I love, as you know, the Q&A does this as well, but just the random topics to talk about. It's super fun. It was really fun to interact with everyone. Alex Cronenberg asks, or says, states, comments. Wah! So cool to hear you answer my question, mate. Oh, thanks. Apologies for my rather tongue-in-cheek answer. My actual three non-force-using Jedi. So Alex, last episode, wanted to know what three non-force users would I upgrade to Jedi as far as force powers go in the films. I think it was it the original trilogy, or I think it was all of them. And yeah, it was, because Maz Kanata was one of mine. I would have thought it was pretty sick if she was like a retired Jedi. I thought that would have been pretty cool. His actual three non-force-using Jedi I would go for are Greedo, Dengar, Mon Mothma. These are your non-tongue-in-cheek, my tongue's at the back of my mouth, answers. Greedo. So Greedo would have actually moved out of the way for Han's blaster. I guess that makes sense. So you're a genius, Alex. You did it. You solved Star Wars with that one. I'm not sure about Dengar and Mon Mothma, though. Brandon Baker, he chimes in. Hi, Steel. I love many of the DC Comics animated films. I watched the final four Clone Wars episodes stitched together in one uncut movie. I loved it so much. Question, do you think if Disney Plus released the 35 Clone Wars story arcs, 135 episodes divided by four as 35 Clone Wars animated movies, it would lead to more folks watching versus individual episodes? All right. Here we go. I'm going to try and not contradict myself here with the episode. I did say that I think on streaming, things should come out episodically, like The Mandalorian, like The Clone Wars. But as a bonus feature down the track, uploading a movie-length version of each arc? Hell yes. Yes. That would be sick. Do it to all of them, 35. You could release one a week. It's such a cheap thing to make. And then we could all play along. Release them in chronological storyline order. And you could have the movie in there as well. That could be a cheat week. But that would be sick. And it would like recycle the content. It would repurpose it. So yeah, I think that would be awesome. Release them originally in episode form, and then bring them back as a full movie.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm thinking, this is getting pretty fan edity, but, you know, have some fun with the content. Edit together a Mandalorian movie from the 8 episodes. I don't like Toro Calican's hope of making the final cut of that movie, because his episode is pretty superficial to the whole story. It's a movie in itself. Who are we kidding? Bring out a movie-length episode of that. Yes, now we're on to something. But yeah, a cut. You know, I'd watch a fan edit of that as well. to edit down the Mandalorian into a 2.5 hour movie would be a fun experiment. But yeah, that would be sick. I would high endorsement there, Brandon. Emily Lint of the Canto Bite Dispatch podcast and the Pop Culture Hour podcast, which I don't think has had an official episode yet. The former Rogue One with Johnny and Pappy Boy out there. Shout out to Pappy Boy stealing my memes. It's a bit of trolling there for Mr. Michael Pappas. But speaking of famous New Yorkers, Emily Lind chimes in with, what do you think of Jerry Seinfeld's new special? Jerry Seinfeld is my Luke Skywalker of comedians. My original and my best. I can tell you for days stories about my love of the series Seinfeld. It is more of, sometimes people say to me, oh, I don't like Star Wars. Just, you know, you can still be friends. You know, people, they overdo it. Whatever. Having a bit of fun. It does not bother me if someone has not seen Star Wars. Callum Preston, who had never seen Star Wars, who I took to see Rogue One. You can listen to that episode in the archives. I took someone that had never seen a Star Wars movie to see Rogue One to see if you could follow what was going on. And he's an artist from Melbourne and just one of the most talented people ever. So now he's seen a Star Wars film, but before that he hadn't. I thought it was a shame, but we got along just great. So I don't judge people on not seeing Star Wars or not liking Star Wars. But when people don't like Seinfeld, not the stand-up, but the series, I got to think, is this for me? Why risk it? Why risk it? So I've seen Jerry Seinfeld recently. I think maybe, it was before Harry, so it would have been 2 years ago. Probably 3 years ago, because I don't even think Jackie was pregnant, which seems like 10 years ago. TBH. So I saw his new set, and I was really impressed. You know, I was sort of going as, you know, nostalgic. I'd seen him once in Melbourne on his I'm Telling You for the Last Time tour, after Seinfeld finished in the 90s. And just the way he came out bounding, just like relentless first 20 minutes. And, you know, his stories are far longer. He now has to do comedy from the position of a famous billionaire rather than a man on the street noticing things. And I think he tackles that pretty well. I loved the special. I laughed a lot. A negative for me was him weaving in a few old bits, which to my ear just stood out like really, like they're funny, but it just it was sort of like, oh, why are you putting that in there? But the intro for it, we're jumping off the helicopter. I don't know what's going on there. I've seen the billboard on Melrose and it's sort of like a James Bond ripoff. And I was like, this is so 90s, Jerry. Spot on. But yeah, loved it. Thought it was great. What did you think of it, Emily? I'll have to ask you on Twitter. Griffin Campbell. Hi, Steel. Been a while since I posted. Had some financial stuff up, but now I'm good. Thanks, man. I agree with your smiley face. I'm glad you're good, and I'm glad you're back. What is your favorite skateboarding memory and why? Love hearing you talk all about it. Easy. My favorite skateboard memory is I would have been maybe 12 or something. Pretty young. Like first year of high school-ish. Maybe second year. And this is, you know, late 80s, I guess. And there is this big skateboard tour is announced for Easter at Paran Ramp, which was about an hour and 20 minute drive from where I lived. Paran was, it's just out of the city. It's sort of the, like a really cool part of Melbourne where all like the collectors, maybe not so much now, there's still a few collector shops and skateboard shops and record shops and, you know, real eclectic independent stores, which I just love. And that was the center of, you know, almost Australian skateboarding, definitely Melbourne skateboarding, because there was a vertical ramp and a bowl behind it. So there was, you know, street skaters, bowl skaters, and vert skaters could all congregate there and skateboard. And, you know, we had some of the best skateboarders in the world, like literally would go on to be like, you know, number ones, skate there every weekend with us, which was, now I look back and it, just some true wonder years, memories. But so there was this demo planned for, so it would have been Easter. So it may well have been the day before Good Friday, Thursday afternoon, Paran Ramp, 5 p.m. skateboard demo, sponsored by Vision Streetwear and the Snake Pit Skateboard Shop, one of the great skateboard shops in skateboard history. And the lineup was Mike McGill, Mark Gonzalez, Lee Ralph, Christian Hazoy, Neil Blender, Lance Mountain, who incidentally didn't skate. He just took photos on the platform. But he did sign my Lance Mountain t-shirt I was wearing that day, so I was very happy. I said Christian Hazoy, Steve Caballero, and Tony Hawk. Now, as I said, Jerry Seinfeld is my Luke Skywalker of comedy. Tony Hawk was definitely my Luke Skywalker of skateboarding. I, at one point, had over 300 pictures of him on my wall. I've always been a bit obsessive, you guys. It's weird when you look back and you're like, oh, all the signs were there. Not only did I have 300 plus, I think it was like 346 or something, but I knew the count. Jesus. the couch session this has turned into. But so they're doing this skateboard demo, and those guys like Tony Hawk and Christian Hazoy had only been to Australia once the year before, and I was far too young. Or maybe it was 2 years before. But it was sort of out of the question that I could travel to the city to go see this demo. And it was on a sort of a little yank, like winky-dink portable ramp. So not a good, you know, I'm sure they would have blown minds. I've seen footage of it. But, you know, Paran was a pretty world-class ramp for the time. And me and my friend Jamie Kennedy left my house. Oh, it was a school day as well, right? And my parents were not super strict, but pretty strict. And I remember going to my mum, because this demo had been announced, and like not getting to see it, not like having this take place an hour and a half from my house was unacceptable in my life. And I remember sitting in the lounge room and, oh man, this is such a funny memory. Sitting in the lounge room and putting together a bank of evidence to help my cause at why I should be allowed to go to this demonstration and and what it would mean to me. And I remember sucking it up and strolling into the kitchen. And I remember where my mum was and where I was, where I put it to her. And she took it in. She said, I think that'll be okay. Oh. Oh. Not a problem in the world. Oh, man. And so me and Jamie got up to get a bus. It was like an hour bus ride to get to the train and then an hour train ride. Far quicker in a car. And we got up at nighttime. We were waiting at the bus stop and it was dark outside. And I don't know what time it was. Like the first bus, maybe it was like before 6 a.m. Which when you're like 12, it's like, why? No. And we got to Paran to like get a spot behind the fence, because it was like a fence where we knew the crowd wouldn't be allowed past. We got our spot at 8 a.m. and the demo was at 5 p.m. And it wasn't this sort of thing that prepared me for Comic-Con and Celebration. We just stood there happily for how many hours is that? Like 8 hours? Wait. 8, 9 hours. And just didn't think anything of it. It was what, this is the way. This is the way. And it wasn't like, it wasn't, people were like squashing up already. Like, we didn't know until the magazines came out with the photos, but there was like 5,000 to 10,000 people behind us because skateboarding was just so big then. In the park. And this was such a, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity to see the gods skate all together. Thursday afternoon, Paran Skate Park. Beautiful, beautiful autumn day from memory. And when Tony Hawk came through the crowd to get to the ramp, and I like actually saw him in the flesh for the first time, it was so surreal that, like, because it was like seeing like Hulk Hogan to me. Like, he was a superhero. Like, I remember seeing him, like, I can see him. And you know, like, it was also, you know, in the 80s, like, California was just so far away. It was, oh, it was incredible. And like the demo was just so good. Everyone skated so rad. And I think one of the last tricks that Tony Hawk did was a 720, which was like his best trick at the time. And I was just so fulfilled. And yeah, it was that's one of my favorite memories. Wow. I got a bit choked up there. That was, they were some good days, man. They were some good days. And Griffin's final question, and the final question of this episode, is to add to my last question, do you find yourself watching skate videos often? Thanks to the announcement of a Tony Hawk remaster, they're bringing back out the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 with sort of new, I don't know, 10... 30 DPI, whatever. Very exciting for people that have time to watch video games or play them. So yeah, thanks to the announcement of the Tony Hawk remaster, I'm going to rabbit hole. I watched Baker 3 yesterday, and I'm currently watching the epically related video on Elisa Steamer, one of the most legendary women pro skateboarders. It's a huge pioneer, especially for like street skating, like gnarly street skating. I guess you could say I forgot how much I love skateboarding until recently. Now, when Harry was, like, I had to nurse him a lot at night, sometimes for hours during the night, I would watch skateboard competitions on YouTube. So I'd sort of have Bluetooth headphones on, and I would just watch like X Games and like whatever the Jew Tour and stuff, because it was mindless, but it was entertaining, and I wouldn't have to watch the whole thing to follow the story. I just watched the skateboard runs, and I was interested, you know, I like that stuff is interesting to me, how people do and what tricks they do and what risks they take. You know, whether they do a safe line, a safe run, or they try like really hard tricks to win, that sort of stuff. That all interests me, because I'm a skateboard nerd. And so I watched a lot of them. Now, at the moment, I have gone back and I watched, not like Baker 3 is probably a bit too current to me. I love going back and watching the 80s and the early 90s skate videos. So like the Power Peralta Bones Brigade videos, like contest videos. Like now on YouTube, there's a lot of like sort of like early street and mini ramp contests that didn't get released on video in Australia that people have uploaded them, and I love going back to watch those. And you bring up Epic Related, which is a documentary series on Vice that sort of skateboarder and photographer Patrick O'Dell did. And there's sort of mini documentaries on personalities in skateboarding. That's the stuff I love. I love hearing them reflect back, and they cover all eras of skateboarding and the highs and the lows. I love watching documentaries about skateboarding. The Bones Brigade documentary, that was incredible. There's another one which they had like a bonus thing which I bought, but now it's on YouTube, called The Bonus Brigade, and that's like another 2.5 hours of interviews from when they did that. The Bones Brigade in the 80s was like the Jedi Council of skateboarding. Everyone that was sponsored by Pal Peralta, they were known as the Bones Brigade. And that was Tony Hawk, Ronnie Mullen, Steve Caballero, Lance Mountain, Tommy Guerrero, Mike McGill. They were the grandmasters. And what other stuff have I been watching? These days I like to watch The Nine Club. It's sort of, they're in trying to do isolation episodes at the moment, which I don't like as much. I don't think the chemistry's there, but the Nine Club is like a modern day interview sort of chat show about skateboarding. And they have skateboarders come on and tell their life story, and they, you know, the reasons they left sponsors, video parts, all that good stuff. I love it. So I love all the backstory. So I would suggest, if you want some documentaries, the Bones Brigade one, which Bones Brigade is a love story? What is that called? Bones Brigade documentary. I can't remember the actual name. Dogtown and Z-Boys is an awesome documentary, also by Stacey Peralta. The Man That Sold the World, which is a documentary about World Industries founder Steve Rocco. You know, Flame Boy Wet Willie. His story is amazing, going from... I read an interview with him when I was a little kid, and he was homeless. He was living on Natus Corpus Pro Skateboarders floor. He was in this interview, said he didn't have he was homeless. And that to me was, to read an interview with a homeless person was quite shocking. You know, full credit to my parents for giving me a life where that was shocking. And he said in the interview that he's going to start this skateboard company called World Industries, and it's going to be the greatest skateboard company, the biggest skateboard company of all time. And I was like, this homeless person's out of his mind. And he went and did it. And now he lives in a mansion in Malibu. all sold out, out of skateboarding, and a very happy man. So I love stories like that. So that's The Man That Sold the World. There's Big Brother magazine, which is sort of like the precursor to Jackass, but it was an amazing skateboarding magazine. They're very edgy. They've got a documentary on Hulu. I think it's called Stupid. That's really good. And closer to home in my growing up skateboarding at Paran, All This Mayhem is a documentary about two brothers that I grew up skateboarding with, Tuss and Ben Pappas. And they went on to be the one and two ranked skateboarders, vertical skateboarders in the world. And then they, you know, there's drugs and a lot of bad stuff happens to them, like really bad stuff happens to them and the people around them. And that's actually made by my friend Eddie Martin, who's a very acclaimed documentary maker. High recommendation on that. I think that one might be for free on Amazon Prime right now. So, yeah, check all those out. But, you know, skate videos, the era that I like to watch, Blind Video Days, featuring Jason Lee, actor extraordinaire. That's one of the all-time ones. I like the Plan B early videos, the early like World Industries videos, pretty much all the Girl and Chocolate videos, but particularly earlier ones. That's the stuff I really love. And, of course, the Pal Peralta Bones Brigade videos really, really shaped how I dress, spoke, and acted as a child. Incredibly so. So that is it. That was really fun. And as you can see, you can ask about Star Wars and or whatever, podcasting, skateboarding. I will try to keep the less Star Wars ones towards the end of the episode. So if you're just here for the Wars-ing chat, then you can fade to black after that wraps up. But thanks, everyone, for those questions. That was super fun. And a huge thanks to all our patrons for supporting the show. You know, every third or so of these episodes go up on the free feed and of all our Patreon bonus shows. But to get every episode, it is just $3 a month at patreon.com/steelwars. And you get access to over 600 full-length back episodes from the interviews, the blog pods, the comedy festival shows, the live commentaries, the celebration shows, and then bonus shows like Star Wars U by Podcast with Hawes Burkhart, where we go through Star Wars history while reading the Star Wars U by U podcast. Oh, no, book. I was trying to do that so slick, and I messed up. The Robber Report, we just did a watch-along episode 28 of The Mandalorian Episode 5, The Gunslinger, starring Toro Calican. So good. And Page Wars is another regular episodes that we've been keeping up with King Tom Chansky, filling us in on the Star Wars books and comics that are coming out that we don't have time to read. Super fun for just $3 a month. And, oh, just heartfelt, honest truth. Every $3 subscription really adds up and helps to be able to work out the time to do the show. You know, it would, yeah. So thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it. And yeah, it's appreciated. So thanks, you guys, for that. And I hope you are finding the hashtag content worthwhile. Give it a chance for $3 a month. And $3 a month, you can download all 600 if you're that keen and then end it. And you've got a lot of listening. And there's a lot of, you know, no false modesty, great interviews that, in retrospect, come out pretty timeless with the subject matter that we talk about, which is why sort of one of the reasons why I started with the interview format first, because I thought that was a bit more of a timeless format than the news shows that I loved, but I thought they did an awesome job. And again, with this time thing, I desperately want to get back to the interviews. So I've got a list, got some great ones up for grabs, but we will get there because that is so fun. Got a lot of post-isolation plans for the old pod. So, yeah, excited about that. Thank you guys for listening along. I really appreciate it. If you enjoyed this ep, it is all access, so give it a retweet on Twitter if you please. It really helps me out and buoys my spirit. Thank you guys so much, and may that force be with you.
That's Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Yeah.
I just thought, I'm just confirming.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.